Good morning. Last week we ended off with a question. We're discussing a case of a broker. He took premiums, he took money for insurance. He never actually issued the policy. And then when the house, it was a title insurance company, when the house was actually, was a claim against the house, and the homeowner wanted to sue the title company. So we discussed whether the broker has liability for the actual loss, whether it's Bari Hezekah, whether it's Miad. And we pointed out that the technical Dine de Garmi, it is difficult to be Machayiv him. It is very likely Alts Minhug, it's, you know, person accepts responsibility. But in the absence of a Minhug, the straight halacha, it would be difficult to be Machayiv the broker because it's not a Bari Hezekah, it's not clear the loss would happen, and it's likely it would be considered Menias HaRevach regardless. So next question is, can the homeowner turn around and, assuming he has a legal case, can he sue the insurance company? Now the problem is, when he sues the insurance company will in turn sue the broker or raise his premiums and cause him a loss. So is this a question of groma or garmi, that you're causing the insurance broker a loss? Now the same question really comes up every time a person's in a car accident, so, and he wants to put in a claim against the other person's insurance. He is going to cause the other party's rates to go up or for him to lose coverage completely. Is it mutter to do that? Are you allowed to cause another yid a loss? Now, obviously, if the other person is responsible, pi halacha to pay, so you can tell him, listen, I have no problem. I don't want to cause you a loss. I don't have to put in the insurance claim. Just pay it out of pocket. So if the person is a mazik, if he did it in a way where he has direct liability to you, so it's really not a question. You can give him the choice. You know, if you want to pay out of pocket, pay out of pocket. If you don't, I'll go to the insurance. You'll save yourself all that money, and you deal with them as far as the rates. But the question is, what happens in a situation where the way that accident happened, al pi halacha, he would be pater, but bidinehem, if you sue the insurance company, you will win. So in that case, are you allowed to sue? Are you allowed to recover this money when it'll cause the other party a loss? So there's a fascinating shuva in the Chavis Yar, Simin Reish Gimel, who deals with the following case. A person lends money to a local duke or prince, the high government official. When it came time to, when the loan was due, he tries to collect. Now, lending money to a duke is a very lucrative profession. The problem is that it's very difficult to collect because you're dealing with, he is the government, and it's, you know, is rather high, you know, pretty high credit risk. And what happened over here is the duke said, okay, listen, you want to collect your money? Okay, I'll pay you. But if you force me to pay, I'm going to expel every Jew from my province. So what happened? All the Yidden and all the Jews in his province came running and said, you can't do this to us. By you going ahead and being teveya, by going after the guy, you're causing us a tremendous loss. Our entire families of men, women, children, we're all going to be expelled. We have no place to go. You're not allowed to go ahead and collect this debt. So the Chavis Yar in Simon Reish Yud Gimel deals with this question. And he says that the townspeople do not have a claim. Because the lender lent money to this duke. Al pi halacha, and l'havdo b'dinayim, he has every right to collect that money. Now it's true this guy is an anos. He pulls out a gun and says, if you go ahead and you collect this money, I'm going to take it out on someone else. That is their problem. And if they want to stay in this city and they have a problem, they'll have to either bribe the governor, or if they want to pay you off, they can pay you off. But a person doesn't have to lose out. He doesn't have to forego money that he's entitled to just because the guy in turn will go ahead and be honest and go ahead and take it out on somebody else. Now the Chavis Yar actually is mashma a little bit. There's a little bit of a steer between the beginning and the end. The Chavis Yar seems to imply that he's only matter in that case because it was not clear that the guy would carry through on the threat. However, in other poskim, it's mashma. Even when we know it will happen, you have the right to put in your claim because you're not responsible for what he will do after. Now the Erechai that we had in last week's Mara Mekoyim has a fascinating case. He adds a few more, you know, important parameters. And Erechai's case was as follows. The government seized a piece of property on the edge of the ghetto, and they used it to make the street, to make the thoroughfare a bit wider. The landowner complained, you seize my property, you know, you may have the right to take it, eminent domain, but you have to compensate me. You have to pay me for the property that you took. So the governor turned around. He didn't have a choice. That was the law. But what he did is he imposed the tax only on the Jewish ghetto. Now, Zakti Erochshai, a government certainly has the right to tax its citizens. You have a new project, you have to make the roads, you have to improve the roads, you have the right to tax people. But the government's right to tax people, as we will learn in Dinah Malchus Adina, is only when it's a fair tax. They tax across the board. They tax everyone equally. Or alternatively, if the government wants to figure out who uses the road and make the people who benefit from the road, make them pay for it, that also makes sense. But in this case, where the road was not necessarily for the benefit of the Jews over anybody else, and the government was taxing only the Jews, Zakti Erochshai, that's not Dinah Malchus Adina, that's Gezel. It's essentially the guy stealing money from the Jews. So what happened over here is, the Jewish people who were being forced to pay the tax went ahead and were Teveya, the landowner, and said, you can't put in this claim, you can't make the guy pay for, or you can't accept this payment from the government for the property, since this payment is coming from stolen money. So Zakti Erochshai, al pi din, the government has no right to collect this tax, and the money that they're forcing the Jews to pay for this road is straight gezel. So Zakti Erochshai, it'll depend what happens. If we can show that the government, the tax collector, went to the ghetto, collected all the money, then went to this landowner and said, okay, we owe you the money, here's it, and drops down the sack of gold. Zakti Erochshai, in that case, the landowner has to return it. Because it's true he has a legitimate claim against the government, but the government paid with stolen money. If you lend a ganav money, and actually we recently had to deal with a similar case, a person invested or lent money to a gentleman that was running a Ponzi scheme. He never got paid back. So over time, he applied very significant pressure to get his money back. So one day, the Ponzi schemer comes with a check and paid him $100,000 of the debt. What emerged a few months later is that this check was written out from a company, which is actually a dummy company, that had been used for another Ponzi scheme. And by looking at the records, it was clear what had happened is there was a new investor came in. He wired money into this dummy company. There was nothing there for a particular investment. The Ponzi schemer took it. Instead of investing it, he used it to pay back the old debt. So in that case, the new investor can come to the old investor and say, give it, and he can claw it back. He can say, your debt was paid with stolen money. And he was able to show that it came from my account, basically went directly to you. And in that case, even though you have a legitimate claim against the ganav, since the ganav used my money to pay off his debt, he had the right to ask for it back, and he had the right to recover it. Zakti Erochshai, in this case as well, if you can show that they took the money that they collected, you know, illegally from the Jews and paid the landowner, the Jews would have a right to demand it back, and obviously now the landowner would have to go after the government, which he's not going to be able to. But that's his problem. He would still have to return this stolen money. Yes, because if you give money to a Jew, he takes it for an investment. He takes it and hands it to someone else as a present, to pay back the chayv. So the person whose money it is has the right to say, my money was taken, give it back to me. Zakti Erochshai, although this is true in theory, in practice, this is not going to happen. Why? Because you're never going to be able to prove, or it's unlikely that you're going to be able to prove, that they went ahead, they took the money they collected from the taxes, you know, inappropriately, and used that to pay the homeowner, the landlord. What probably happened is, they had their general account, they go ahead, they have legitimate taxes, and they have this stolen money. It's all one big pot. Once it's all one big pot, it's true we can prove that this governor stole from the ghetto. But it went into his account. He went ahead. We don't know where that stolen money went. Money is fungible. It could be paid his grocery bill for. He paid for his soldiers. So in that case, although we know that this government stole from the ghetto, stole from Jews, and we also know that he paid this other person, he paid many people. And since we have no way to establish which money was used for what, so there the landowner would be able to keep the money and he would not have a chiv to give it back to the people who had paid the taxes. So that's the Erochshai's first chiddush. Then the Erochshai deals with our question. Was the landowner allowed to put in the claim in the first place if he's going to cause a loss if he knows that the taxes are going to be collected from townspeople. So over here, the Erech Shai says, similar to the Chavos Yar, that you could. Since you have a legitimate claim against the government, what the government will do afterwards, even though you know they're going to turn around and steal it from the Jews, that's not your problem, you have the right to put in the claim. Now, over here, the Erech Shai adds a chiddush. He says this is true whether you have a claim in halacha, whether al pi halacha the government owes you, or even if you don't, if bidinehem, if legally they owe you this money, you can put in the claim. Because even though in al pi halacha, if it came to a din Torah, if it was a yid involved, they would be potter. But since the guy, when you deal with a guy, you go bidinehem, and legally the guy owes you the money, you have every right to put in the claim, even though as a result of that, the guy will turn around and steal from a Jew. Zog the Erech Shai, there's one big limitation. It seems that even back then, whenever you dealt with the government or you put in an insurance claim, the minhag was to bribe the assessor and to inflate the claim. Zog the Erech Shai, if you're going to go ahead and you're going to ask for more than you're entitled to, that's a whole different story. Because besides with the problem of Mata Akam, that's a misser. But now, the people of the ghetto are Balei Dvarim. They can say, by you going ahead and defrauding the government, we're losing out. Because we know, it's clear already that whatever he pays, he doesn't really care how much he pays, because he's just going to turn around and take it from us. So by inflating this claim, we're ultimately coming out of our pockets. There, the Erech Shai says, the people in the town, there they do have a legitimate taina. And if a person does collect extra, he'll have a chiyuv to return the funds to the people in the ghetto. Obviously, even without this, there's an issue of mata akum. That's for another shir. But the point of the Erech Shai is that the yid that's losing at the end, he himself can put in a claim because he's impacted. Even though it's not direct, it's the goy being an anas, but he has the right to complain about it to stop this from happening. Now, every time a person is in a car accident, and he wants to file an insurance claim, you really have this issue. It's like we pointed out before. If the other person's at fault, and Alpidini has to pay, so it's really not an issue. You can tell him, you know, either pay cash or I'll go to the insurance. And the driver will obviously prefer that you go to the insurance. But what happens in a case where Alpi Halacha he would be potter, but legally you'd be able to sue him, legally you'd be able to prevail. So over here it would seem, according to this Erech Shai, according to this Chavos Yar, it shouldn't be a problem. Because since the insurance company is going to pay, and legally the insurance company has an obligation to you, so this is like the Erech Shai's case, even if at the end of the day the insurance company will turn around and be mafsid the Yisrael, still, since you're asking for something that you're entitled to, what you're collecting is a claim that al-pi dina d'malchus adina, the insurance company has to pay, this should not be a problem, and you should not have to worry about the result, the fact that someone else will lose out at the end of the day. The complication here is, and this we discussed when we were discussing the halachos of our kois, is that when you sue an insurance, you typically do not sue an insurance directly. You're really suing the homeowner or the driver. Once the driver has to pay, or there's a judgment against him or a settlement, the insurance company steps into his shoes, indemnifies him, they pay the amount that he was supposed to pay. So in a situation where al pi halacha, the person would really be potter. So here, you're not just putting in a claim against a guy where you have a claim against the guy. What you're doing is you're making up your claim against a yid, which al pi halacha may not exist. And through that, although he's not going to pay out of pocket, you're going to cause his premiums to go up because the insurance company will pay and then take it back from him. So here it's a bit more of a question. There are svaras lahakel. The first svara is that especially with a car accident, if the person is a reckless driver and smashes your car, so you can really done. If you cause his premiums to go up, is that called causing him a hefzer? No. What's happening is that the insurance company is becoming aware he's a miserable driver. He is a serious risk, and therefore they're going to charge him the appropriate price. So it's true, if you don't put in a claim, they'll never know what kind of bad driver he is. They'll never know what his record is, and perhaps will undercharge him. But now that by going through this, they'll simply know the truth, and now they'll charge him the amount that he really should be paying based on his track record, perhaps that's not called a loss. Now, you can also argue that it's not called a loss because, you know, who asked him? It's not really a hefset out of pocket. It's just if he wants to buy insurance, it'll cost him more. going over to a merchant and telling him to charge someone more when it comes to the store a higher price is not a loss. It's just a minyas revach. It's just it's going to cost him more to buy it. There are such svaras. If you want to drive. Now, it's true. It's rather hard to get around without driving, but it's hard to call that a hefsir.
The actual act is when it has to suit the person.
Right. So that we discussed when we went through Hilchos Arkos, whether you're allowed to file that lawsuit. We said that at least in the case of a car accident, many places can say that although the technicalities are you sue the person, it's understood by the judge, the jury, and everyone involved, there's an insurance company that's going to ultimately pay. So the concept of Avenu Pelilim, it's a Chilul Hashem, what are you doing in court? Go to arbitration. If everyone knows you can't go to arbitration when there's an insurance, that is a heter in Hilchos Arkos. Again, we discussed the back and forth when we discussed Arkos. Here we're focusing on the fact that you're causing a loss. There are some places that say, because of this issue, that you don't have a direct claim against the insurance company and you are causing the rates to go up. There are places that will say, you can file the lawsuit, you can collect the money, but you should reimburse the other person for whatever hefsid he has, whatever the increase in the premiums are. Again, if it comes up, you'll ask a shayla, but this is really the discussion. The issue is, because it's not a direct claim against the insurance company, it's indirect, and that's why we have this question. What this leads us to is the general concept of Hilchos Mesira. What is the halacha when a person involves a goy in a dispute between two Jews that causes a loss, possible criminal proceedings? What are the gedarim? Now, Hilchos Mesira is, actually, it's two quick points for introduction. The first point is that Hilchos Mesira is one of the most chomer dika inyanim in Choshen Mishpat. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says it has a list of people of Ein Lechelek Adam Haba. The list is a list of people who are pretty drastic and severe Averois and Apikairis, someone who's Choytu Machti Esarabim. And on that list is a Moiser. Someone who's Moiser, and Rashi explains he's Moiser Mamin Yisrael La Yarakim. So a person who is over the Isra Mesira is Ein Lechelek Adam Haba. It is something which is very Chomer. Of an Isser Chamura, very often not doing anything, also has a Suffolk Isser. And therefore, it's something which certainly you should not be slimmich on the Shir for any halacha l'maisa. If anything comes up, you should ask a Shaila. But we're going to go through the Sugya, we'll go through some of the parameters just to have an appreciation why it's so Chamur and what are some of the Pratim and the parameters that play a role in the halacha. Now, the Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, discusses the halachas of Mesira. And the Gemara starts off with a story that a person was about to be Moiser someone's money. Then Amoira warned him, do not be Moiser, do not give this over to the guy. The person said, ignore the warning, said, I'm going to go ahead and do it. So Gemara said that Amoira on the spot went ahead and cracked his neck and killed him. This Gemara needs an explanation. They're fighting over whatever it was, they're fighting over a couple of dollars. They weren't talking about going to the feds and going ahead and reporting that the person had done something, say, you know, it's treason and he'd be killed. What he was doing is he was going to go ahead and turn over money or assets to the government. So for that, why is an Amoira going ahead and killing him over this? So the Gemara explains, and the Rush speaks that a little bit more clearly in Tshuvas HaRush, Yudayin. And the Gemara says that when you turn something over to an Anos, when you're Moiser Mamun Yisrael Liarakum, it's Ketoy Michmar. It's, if you have a shepherd, he watches his sheep. Every once in a while at night, a wolf comes and kills and makes off with a couple of his sheep. If one day that he traps the wolf, that wolf is not, it doesn't stand a chance. PETA, environment, the animal is going to be killed. Zaga Gemara, the same thing is true by a Moiser. If you go ahead and you give over even Mamun Yisrael Liarakum, it's Ketoy Michmar. It's like he's trapped. And as the Rosh explains, first the goyim would torture you to get the money. Then when they have all of your money, though, they're not going to believe you. They'll continue torturing you until they actually kill the person because maybe he has more money, maybe he can squeeze more out. And because of that, a person who is moiser has a din of a roidif. He has a din of a roidif. Just like if you see someone running down the street with a butcher's knife trying to catch someone, trying to kill him. The halacha is, if you're able to stop the person, the only way to stop him is by killing him. There is a chiyuv to do so. He's a roidif. He needs to be stopped. So too, someone who threatens to be moiser, or according to many poskim, if he has a chazaka, If this is what he's done it a number of times, this is what he does, the halacha is, he has a din of a roidif, and if the only way to stop him is to actually kill him, that is what that is the chiyuv. In fact, the Tshuva Zichron Yehuda, the son of the Rosh, writes that the Rimagash once, there was a moiser that showed up into his shul on Yom Kippur Shecholiyos B'Shabbos. Now it seems that a moiser was hard. They weren't very religious. They didn't hang around the shul that much. But a Yom Kippur, even the moiser would come daven with a minyan, would come to the shul. So he says it was a Yom Kippur Shecholiyos B'Shabbos. And by Ne'ilah, the Rimagash went and killed him. Yom Kippur Shecholiyos B'Shabbos, Ne'ilah, you think this is a time that you need whatever schusim you can. It shows the Chaymer Hadavar. And if you look through the Tshuvas, historically, Klal Yisrael suffered terribly at the hands of Moser. As it was, even in the absence of anyone being Moser, the governments and the Anosim did plenty of damage to Klal Yisrael. But the moment there was an insider going ahead and racing on and feeding the government, whether it was true or lies, about what the Jews were doing, it wreaked havoc, caused tremendous losses in both lives and money. And that's why it is treated so severely, and the halacha is he has a din of a roidif. So that's the first point. A moiser has a din of a roidif. Besides a din of a roidif, he also is chayiv midin de garmi for all the losses that are incurred. And the Gemara in Kuf Yud Zayin talks about if your moiser mamon yisrael liyad akum, and the guy goes ahead and takes it, you're responsible for all the loss. Even though you didn't do anything, you just told the guy where this Jew's money is. Since an anas is going to go ahead, he's going to steal it. He's going to take it. So halacha is you're responsible to pay. Now, if you remember, in the first year of Dinan Degarmi, we said if you tell a ganiv about someone's money, you're not liable. Because that's not garmi. But since a ganiv doesn't steal everything that's out there, and just telling him about it, since he may or may not go ahead and steal it, it's not garmi. However, when you're dealing with an anos, when you're dealing with a goy that has a chazaka, that he's an anos, there we say telling him about the money is garmi, because it's as good as gone. It's ketoy michmer. There's no question about it. He's going to take the money. And therefore, besides the fact you have a din of a roidif, you're actually chayiv to pay out to the hezek. Now the Gemara adds, even if you're forced to give it to the anos, in many cases you're going to be chayiv. In other words, there are a group of bandits, someone pulls out a gun and says, give me your neighbor's money. You go into your neighbor's house and you bring it to him under the gunpoint. Your life is in danger. So it's a machlokes rishonim, but the mechaber paskins, you're responsible to pay for the damage. Other rishonim argue, they say, what do you mean? Pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh we know is doicho, it's not avoid desire. At pikuach nefesh you should be potter. But the mechaber says, no, you're going to be chayiv. And the reason for that is, it's true, al pikuach nefesh, you have the right to steal the money and return it. That just means you're allowed to take it. But pikuach nefesh is not a reason why you shouldn't be responsible or pay the person back afterwards. And therefore, according to the Mechaber, and according to many Rishonim, even if you're at gunpoint, if you actually go ahead and give the money to the Anos, you're going to have to pay. There's actually a fascinating psak from the Binyan Siyan. He takes this even further. Binyan Siyan says that although the halacha is you're allowed to go at gunpoint, you're allowed to steal the money, because he says you're allowed to steal it because to save your life because you're going to go ahead and pay for it afterwards. What would be in a situation where you're never going to be able to repay this money? Zuck, the Binyan Siyan is talking about a case where a person died. They want to do an I guess today is the modern version, they want to take out an organ in order to save someone else's life. Zuck the Binyan Siyan, we know you're not allowed to take an organ from a dead person. It's nivul hames. Frech the Binyan Siyan, but maybe it should be mutter. Because over here, you're not just doing it for no reason. You're doing it to save a life. We know that pikuach nefesh is doichu all other isurim. Zuck the Binyan Siyan, according to these Rishonim, you're not going to be able to do it. Because the whole heter is, you're allowed to steal in order to save a life, because afterwards you'll pay it back. But when you're going to be over the Isser of Nivul Hames, he says there's no way to pay it back. The person's dead. There's no way to undo the Nivul Hames. There's no way to drop a few dollars in his kever. There's no way to do it. And therefore, Zuck the Binyan Siyan, in such a case, according to the Yisrael Shain, it would be also to do it even to save someone's life because there's no way to pay him back. Because Moshe happens to say there's no such shita, he says it's a mistake, it can't be. And therefore, he says, according to these Rishonim, it would be also to do to go ahead and do be Nivul HaMeis, even to save another life. Again, it's a Chiddush. Rav Moshe says there's no such Shita, but this is Binyan scene. You'd be out. Rav Moshe says there's nothing to talk about. Pikuach Nefesh is doif for everything else. You have to steal, do whatever you need to do. If you can pay back, good. If you can't pay back, good. So it's Nitcha Mipnei Pikuach Nefesh. Now, as far as this case, it is a machlokes rishonim about matzlatz mamon chaveroi. L'maisa the shach says you have a kimli that if at gunpoint, even if you hand over the item, you're going to be potter, there will be a kimli. But it just, again, it brings out the severity. Now, in a case where you don't actually hand it over, but at gunpoint you just tell the guy where the money is, there everyone agrees, since you're an oinus, you're potter. We've discussed many times that garmi ba'oinus is potter. So when you're not doing an action, you're just telling them, you're just notifying them where the assets are, that is certainly an oinus, and therefore, according to all shittos, you'd be potter. There is a fascinating chiddush from the Amshul Shlomo. It says like this. What happens if you're forced at gunpoint to go ahead and to tell the government, to tell the anos about where your friend's money is? Now, you have a choice. He has two assets, or for that matter, you have two neighbors. They come to you at gunpoint, show me your neighbor's money. You can go to the right, you can go to the left. So which one do you go to? So Zuckli Amshul Shlomo, if they have the same amount of money, so you go to whichever neighbor you like less. Makes no difference. You're Nana, so it's up to you. You can choose, and whatever you do, you do. What happens if the neighbor that you like less is wealthier? And in his house, there's $100,000. The neighbor, your best friend and the neighbor on the other side, only has $50,000 in his house. Zuckli Amshul Shlomo, in this case, you have a chiv to show the $50,000 because it's less. And if you go ahead and you show the other neighbor that has $100,000, not only you're over an Isser, you have to pay him back the $50,000 difference. Because that, there's no Ptoroinus on. Just because you like him better or worse, there's not a reason to go ahead and be mafsid more than you have to. And there's what the Yamshel Shlomo says, that you'd have to pay the difference. It's a big chiddush, but that is the psak of the Yamshel Shlomo. Now, besides for direct costs, many poskim say, if you're a moiser, if you do master on a person, and now he has to go ahead, he has all sorts of legal problems, he gets sued, he has to hire an attorney. It's interesting, the tshuvas back then don't talk about attorneys. They talk about you have to bribe the judge. That was the litigation cost back then. So in that case, most of the poskim say that you would be responsible for that as well. Since the moment you're moiser someone, it's all part of the package. What a person has to do to defend himself is hire the attorney, bribe the judge, whatever it may be. So therefore, that's all included in the original mesira, and the moiser has a chiyuv mamon. So a person that goes ahead and is master someone, shaloi kedin, he has a responsibility to pay all of the legal fees and all the expenses that he causes the other person to incur. So this is in Medina de Gomorrah, the halachos of Mesira. What we see is getting a guy involved is literally you have a din of a roidif. A person's, if you can prevent a person from doing it, you have the right to kill a person to stop it from happening. And after the fact, once it does happen, the moiser is responsible for all of the financial damages that result. And in many cases, even if you were forced to do the Mesira, depending on how it was done, whether you actually did an action or whether you just showed, very often there will be liability as well. Now let's talk about some of the exceptions, some of the heterim. Like I said before, this is a davar chomer ad ma'oid. You should certainly not be slimech on the shir halacha l'maisa. If it comes up, you'll ask a shayla. I'd like to just go through some of the gedorim just to have an appreciation of what rabbanim have to deal with, or what they take into account when they're asking these shaylas. The first point is we have to define what is an anos. Meiser mamon Yisrael, and we say the Yad Akam. What is the definition of an anos? Is every goy automatically considered an anos? So the first halacha is if you look in the Mechaber in Shin Pei Ches, when he discusses it, he says the Isra of Meiser biyad anos bein Akam bein Yisrael. In anos, goyim do not have the exclusive rights to be anosim. You can have Jews as well. So it's clearly not just goy versus Jew. The point over here is an anos is someone who, once you fall into his hands, ketay michmar, the person's finished. He's as good as dead. The person is not going to stop. You're dealing with a mafia. You're dealing with bandits roaming the forest. You're dealing with people who there's nothing holding them back. They do not have to be goyim. They can be yidden as well. On the flip side, we do have Ma'ariv Mekaymus, that not every guy has a din of an anus. There's a halacha that we discussed briefly in Dina de Garmi, that if you have a promissory note that was paid up, and you return it to the lender, so there you're potter midina de Garmi, even if he collects a second time, because it's not your action. It's the lender, when he gets it, either will try to collect a second time, won't. That's not Garmi. Many poskim say, it's a Rashba really, that even if you give the shtar to a goy, and he collects it a second time, so certainly it's us, you're not allowed to do that, but it's not Garmi, because who says he'll go ahead and collect the second time? Wait a second. In Hilchus Mesira, we say, when you're moiser biad anos, just telling the goy this person has money, you're chayiv. Because once you told him, the money's as good as gone. Here we're saying, even though you gave the person a promissory note, you gave him the legal ability to bring the Jew to court and take the money, still you're potter because it's not garmi. Who says he'll actually do it? So you see very clearly, and the Erech Lechem in Simen Shimpei Ches points this out, that not every goy is an anos. An anos is someone who, it's a mafia, a bunch of bandits. Clearly, where once they get involved, the Jews finished. And this is historically, most governments fell into this category. Historically, someone went to the government and mastered, there were tremendous problems in the whole city. And that is the din of an anus. Stam, the fact that he's a goy, does not necessarily rise to this level. You have to look at each case. Now, based on this, or there's an Aruch HaShulchan, which is actually a very interesting Aruch HaShulchan Shin Pei Ches. Before he begins the halachos of Mesira, he says, Ha'ara yadua l'chol koire ha'doiris. He says that everyone who knows a little bit about history knows that historically all the governments in all these far away, all the governments, he said, and today even if you go through Africa, you find that the governments are very weak governments, and they go ahead, anyone who has a few dollars, the government goes ahead, extorts from him, steals from him, and literally his life is always in danger. He says, and that's what Hilchus Mesira is based on. However, the Tsar of Russia and the King and Queen of England that are cultured and they have such a wonderful malchus, it's very different, and they should have much hatzlach. So, the Tzitz Eliezer says, based on this, it's Aruch HaShulchan. He says, Vayistos, Aruch HaShulchan held today, there's no Hilchus Mesira. The governments are different, and there's no problem with Mesira. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer point, perhaps the Aruch HaShulchan had to write this. Perhaps he's worried about the censor. So he says, no, he doesn't think so. Why? He says, first of all, because the way it's not, usually when the censor, it's usually on the bottom. And then he says, if he was worried about the censor, so we understand why he's talking about the Tsar of Russia. But why is he talking about the Queen of England? So it must be he held that it's taka different, and he taka held halacha l'maaseh, din mesira does not apply to a modern civilized government. I think many achroinim argue on this. And the truth is, in this Aruch HaShulchan, if you ever have a few moments and you want to read a fascinating piece from the Aruch HaShulchan, in the Hakdama to Choshen Mishpat, he has, before the Hakdama, he has a two-page letter or writing to talking about the king, talking about the melech of the Tsar of Russia. And he uses flowery lashonis, he's giving brachas after brachas, and he makes a point, a fair amount of this letter is trying to explain to the Tsar that although everyone tells you that we make our matzahs out of blood, it's really not true. And when anyone tells you that again, don't listen to him. He then continues and says that people accuse the Jews that we don't like joining the army, and they claim and they bring some evidence that whenever we get a draft notice, the Jews just disappear. Whoever gets the draft letter just disappears. So Vaisdois, they're not loyal citizens, and they're not good to have around. Zogir Aruch HaShulchan, nothing could be further from the truth. Really, the Jews are dying to join the army, no pun intended. The problem is, they can't afford a winter coat. Everyone knows the Russian army, and they're fighting in Siberia, they need very warm clothing. So when they get the draft letter, what they do is, they run around town collecting, raising funds in order to be able to afford a coat. And they go from city to city. Everyone helps them out in order to help them buy their coats. And Avada, once they get enough money, they're very eager to join the army. But Nebuch, they can't. It's usually just they can't raise enough funds, and that's why they somehow seem to disappear. So it is very clear from the Aruch HaShulchan that he was very concerned about the Malchus. He had issues, and he assumed that the Melech was reading the Sefer. Now, as far as the fact that he talks about the Queen of England, this Aruch HaShulchan lived in the late 1800s, and the Tsar of Russia and the Queen of England were mechutanim. So it's very possible that he was concerned about both ends of the family, and he had to cover his bases. Also, if you look very carefully at the Aruch HaShulchan, the Aruch HaShulchan is a beautifully written sefer. What he says is he starts off by saying that everyone knows that back then in Africa, there was the Malchus, it was terrible, and people's lives were in danger. Then he says that in Russia and in England, it's a wonderful country, and the Malchus does great things. But the Aruch HaShulchan never fears us. He never says, and therefore the Dinei Mesira do not apply. Now, it's certainly the implication, if you read it quickly, that it starts off by saying Mesira is only because of how dangerous it was in Africa, and then he starts talking about how wonderful it is today. But he doesn't go back and say, clearly, there's no Mesira today. So it's mashma, the Aruch HaShulchan is writing this more for the censors. Certainly in Russia was not a very, the Tsars of Russia were not very nice people, and in all likelihood, L'kulei Alma, they would have a din of Mesira. And the Pashas, the Aruch HaShulchan, is not really Negei L'maisa, at least for back then. However, in a government where, in a modern government, which is not like the Tsar of Russia, there are places that will say the Dinei Mesira do not apply. If you're dealing with a system where even if a person is Meiser, they do not just disappear. A person who gets stopped for a traffic accident does not just disappear. This doesn't happen often in Western countries. So in that case, an argument can be made that the regular Dinei Mesira do not apply. Chalkas Yaakov says there's no difference, you can't be Machalik. But I'll call upon him, this is a shayla, this is a factor that comes into account. What I've heard from a number of poskim is that today you will not have the regular, under normal circumstances, you will not have the regular dini mesira, you won't be able to kill a person because he's meiser, but it's still considered mechur hadavar, it's something which is generally discouraged, but again, it will very often not have the regular dini mesira. If a person is faced with jail time, they already, it's less clear. Because jail time, depending on where you are and what you're in for, there could be a it's very likely there is a tzad sakana, and that would be dealt with much more chomer. The Ber HaGoyla does say that the minhag was that they warned everyone not to mess with goyim, and if a person would go ahead and start, they would see that he's borrowing money from goyim, he's defrauding goyim, they would warn him first. And if he continued, they would go ahead and they would go to the government and report him. And that was done p'nei tikkun olam. Because otherwise, people, we'll get to it later, people are going ahead and stealing from goyim. Who loses? Everybody else. So there is a Ber HaGoyla that there's matarit. Good. So there's Maram Rizberg where a person was counterfeiting money. Now there, if a person counterfeits money and the king catches you, they're not so nuanced. They don't start asking where the source was. If it's floating around the Jewish community, they just go ahead and take it out on the whole community. So then Marami Rizberg says, you give him hasra, you warn him that if you don't stop, we're not going to have a choice, we're going to be moister you. If he does not listen, you're moister him. Because it's being done, because he's called a meiter es harabim, he's a public menace, and that is one of the heterim for mesira. The Minchas Yitzchak extends this case. What happens if there's a reckless driver? You have a reckless driver. He's driving like a mishogana. So Zok the Minchas Yitzchak, it has the same din of Meitzer es Harabim. And you have to warn him. If you know who he is, you call him up, you tell him he's got to shape up, stop driving like a lunatic. But if he won't stop, he says he's a Meitzer es Harabim. He's endangering the public. And he says you have every right, and it's probably a chiyuv to go ahead and report him. It's not Mesira. This is it's a public menace, and therefore these halachas do not apply. Now, how far you have to go, how much of a danger it has to be, that's somewhat subjective. Minchas Yitzchak has a Chassam Sefer, that's a Chassan Sefer, they're a Mekel. There's a Chavis Yar that's a little bit more Machmer. Again, that's a Shail you'll ask a Moira Hira. But in concept, if someone is a public menace, the halachas of Mesira will not apply. Good. So to the extent that the person is a danger to the public and there's no way to stop him, there are many cases where they were mater going ahead because it's the only way to stop him. The question is if there are other ways to stop or if he's not a public menace, then that's something that's a factual question which people who are involved, people who are Isaac and these in Yadam are going to have to determine. So that's the second exception. Then a person is a mater as a rabbim, there the halachos of Mesira do not apply. The third exception is the Shach says that in cases where you're turning it over to the government, he says, this is all when the government had no right to take the assets. However, if there was a dina de malchus adina, you actually owed money to the guy and you turned it over to him, that is not called a meiser. Meiser is ultimately a din of mazik. There's money that the anas is going to steal, helping him steal is usur, and since from the theft it'll snowball into worse things, it has these special chumras. But in a case where al pidina demalchus adina he owes the money, that is not called meiser mamon yisrael liyad akum. That's called meiser mamon akum liyad akum. The Jew, you're just preventing the yid from stealing from a goy. Even in a case where it was hafkoyes halvah, where the person can say that I'm. But at the end of the day, it's not called a hefzid. It's not called being mafzid him money, and therefore the dinei masir will not apply. And based on this, the Shevet HaLevi that we had in this morning's Maror Mekoyimus says that you're allowed to work for the IRS, because since what you're doing is, even though it's theoretically possible that you'll catch the one Jew that steals, that cheats on his taxes, but afa biken, since all you're doing is al pidina machus adina, he owes the money anyway, that is not called masirah. Even if there'll be a penalty, the Marsham says a penalty is also included in Dina Machus Dina. Part of their laws is to penalize the people that violate it, and therefore it would not be over the Din of Masira. And these are very general concepts, very general, broad heterim. Like I said before, it's a inu which is very chomer, and it's something which a person certainly should not act without being shayol etzah.